Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's time to ride along with the one family doing what most of us can't even imagine. In the midst of COVID, in the midst of staying at home, they're moving their home every couple of weeks as they wander the world in search of their forever home. Let's bring them in. Our world travelers here who've packed up their family and taken the leap into the great unknown, Michael and Caitlin Domner. Welcome, guys.
Hey, Paul. Good to be here.
Yeah.
Hey, last time I thought that was fascinating. We talked about that transition from the road trip across America, and that alone is different enough for most of us. If you're wherever you're from in America, when you go see the rest of it, there's lots of really different places and big, wide open spaces here. But it's still America. It still has lots of basic fundamental things. I can always find a store. I can always find a gas station. I can always probably get a cell phone signal in most places and an internet connection. And I'm never too far away from some sort of safety net, a hospital, a highway patrolman, a AAA. But once you took that leap from Miami and left the border and flew into the Mayan world, the world started to seem a little less familiar. Talk about that just a little bit, and then we'll talk today about the actual journey through the Mayan world that you've been on for the last couple of weeks here.
Yeah, one thing I was thinking about since our last conversation was just how we said that you need to rely on community here, right, in this world, that you need to know somebody who knows somebody to get stuff done. And one of the hardest things about being a tourist is you're in the community, but you are not a part of the community. Exactly. You have not built trust. You have not built up your credit score within the community. Yeah. So there is this sense of being a little cut off from the lifeline that everybody else is surviving on.
And what's it so, like yeah, to be the foreigner? You know, not to get too deeply into the political weeds here, even at all, but we live in a time in America where we're really questioning, and many of us, not me, but many people are saying, I don't know, are we full? Do we want any more of those people, these others, these different? They look different. They pray different. They sound different. They believe different. You know, that's been the attraction of America since the beginning. But periodically through our history, we go through these anti-foreign spasms. Now the shoe's on the other foot. You're the foreigner. You're the stranger in a strange land. What's it feel like?
Yeah, it's been really strange to have that that feeling, right? Like we're the ones that don't belong here.
Yeah.
And I would say for the most part, I don't know that we've really experienced much negative from that. Especially once the deeper we get down into Belize and Guatemala, you know, having three blonde children running through a market where everybody else is all, you know, black hair and
darker skin.
I'm 6 foot two, so I usually tower over most of the crowd by about a foot. Right. So we definitely stand out when we're in these places that they don't see very many Americans, especially now with COVID.
Right.
And I feel like there's mostly it's curiosity, right? So there's everybody looks at us. We have people come up and just like touch the kids' golden hair, and they, you know, they'll tell us, talk to us in Spanish, most of which I don't understand, but I just smile and nod. And but
Jackson has decided he's going to start charging money for them to touch his golden
hair. There you go. Could be a source of revenue. The little entrepreneur, the little American entrepreneur already, just like his parents here.
Oh goodness!
But yeah, it is, yeah. You are the different. You are the other now. Right. You know, too often we come and then. You know, the others come to America and get assimilated. I'm Irish and I loved, you know, I'm a big history buff. Hey, we were the first big immigrant wave in the 1840s when the potato famine hit and I think like a million or so Irish died and another million or so immigrated from a country that only had 3 or 4 million people in it. You know, it was a massive.
And that's what makes America so unique. You know, almost anybody in the U.S. can go back 3 or 4 generations or 5 generations and their family was elsewhere. Right. So we all kind of have that We've all been assimilated now, and we feel like that's the normal. But there is a very recent recency to that feeling.
Yeah.
And one of the things that strikes me when we talk about that, like the idea of foreign, like do we want to let them in? This group of people. We had a friend of ours that was supposed to travel with us for about a month and a half, and he flew into Mexico. He's from Venezuela, right? So he's from Caracas in Venezuela. So he has a Venezuelan passport, right. And he flew into Mexico, and he. The Mexican authorities just grilled him on, well, what are you doing here? Can you prove that you're going to leave the country? Because wow. I guess there's a lot of Venezuelans that are going to Mexico and then they try to make their way to the United States to emigrate.
Right.
So they literally like grilled him. He was to the point where he thought they were just going to send him back to Caracas. He said they got like all of their whole immigration team. There were like four or five of them. And they were just kind of talking down to him. He said he felt terrible, right? Like he just like he wasn't wanted. But finally, after like 3 hours of that, they let him through. And then we brought him with us. So he's traveling with five Americans with U.S. passports. We came into Belize, and it was a little bit more difficult. It was a little bit more difficult again for him to get through than it was for us. We realize how much we take the U.S. passport for granted, but it is huge when you're traveling the world that we have a U.S. passport. We can go basically anywhere.
Interesting.
So then after Belize, we were coming into Guatemala, and he was supposed to be with us through our whole stay in Guatemala. But literally, we got to the border with Guatemala. And they wouldn't let him through. They just refused to allow him to pass into Guatemala. So we had to leave him behind at the border and kind of scramble to figure out what he was going to do, because we had a flight booked for him out of Guatemala City back to Caracas at the end of the month. He was supposed to be with us for another 3 weeks and travel with us and do all these adventures with us. They just refused him, turned him away at the border.
I don't want to sound like the ugly American, but I got to be honest and say my first thought is we would assume these are all Spanish speaking countries. When any of those people from Mexico, Venezuela, Colombia, all these places come here, we see them as one entity. They're all Latin.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
We see them as one group. And yet once we get outside of our border, there are disputes between these countries. There are fears and regulations. They don't all see each other as one big, happy, interconnected family. Oh, sure. Come on over. You speak Spanish. Come on over. Yeah, who cares?
Yeah. We tend to think of Central America as, well, that's, they're the Spanish speaking southern neighbor. They're all basically the same
from
Ecuador up to Mexico.
Yeah.
But exactly. No, they definitely have their own politics. They have their own, Guatemala has, their government doesn't get along with the Venezuelan government. So they require visas. And it's just, but then it comes back to one hand doesn't know what the other one's doing, right? So we talked to, the vice, the embassy official in
vice consul,
Belize,
and consul, or
and he said, yeah, the vice consul, yeah, and he said, well, you have to do this and this and this, you have to have this paperwork, and then you'll be fine to get into Guatemala. But then the border guards in Guatemala had a different idea. So it comes back to that just lack of efficiencies in the government.
And we
one
still
hand
don't
doesn't know
what
the other one's doing.
We still don't know if 100 Belizean dollars or 100 US dollars would have made the difference,
yeah,
right?
Because if we had just tucked 100 US dollars into his passport when we passed it across, maybe he would have been here today with us. I don't know.
Well, you talked about that the last time where you just came around some little windy road on one bucket list Mayan ruin heading to another bucket list Mayan ruin. And in between, a man had strung up a metal wire cable and said, "No further unless you pay me right now."
Yeah.
Yep.
And you went, okay, I guess that's the way it works. So it there are all sorts of intricacies that we as Americans don't understand. We tend to, I'm going to say another generalization here. Everybody's going to scream when I say this, but I grew up in big cities. I lived last 20 years in California. And how do I view the rest of the country? Where I originally came from, the Middle West, but that's kind of flyover country. It's kind of all the same. There's California, New York, and then there's something in between, and we kind of see it as all kind of the same stuff and the same people. It's clearly not. There's a big difference between being in one state or one, and whether you're in a big city or a small town and all this kind of stuff. Similarly, when you leave the country.
Going through all of these different countries, I'm like, you know, it's enough to make you want a one world order with a single currency. Like,
really? Can't we just do this easier? So well, when I was in when I was in Belize, my only every so often I'm going to run out of stories because you're going to leave the world that I know. I've been to Mexico and I've been to Belize, and when I was in Belize, it struck me as amazing that we landed at the airport. This is in the 80s now, so I did this a long time ago. And the minute we arrived, there's anti-aircraft guns all over the runway. Anti-aircraft guns. And there are armed soldiers everywhere. I said, what the heck's going on? Is there a revolt? Is there a coup? No, then our next-door neighbor, the Guatemalans, are threatening and have been threatening to invade our country and take us over. They've said we shouldn't be an independent country. We should be part of them. And so we're afraid. Have a nice journey, but you might see an invasion here in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and I think the hard thing is that as United States citizens, we might keep up to date on what Mexico is doing, but any further south, it doesn't really matter, right? And I have learned so much. Like, for example, Belize was actually a colony of England until 40 years ago. What was that, like 1981? So they were celebrating 40 years of independence, but they still have the queen on their Belizean dollar.
She's still the queen of Belize. It's kind of a crazy...
So they're kind of like Canada. Like, Belize is still in the Commonwealth. And then we get to Guatemala, and I did not realize that Guatemala had been involved in a civil war that lasted 36 years. Years from 1960 to 1996.
Yeah, it just recently ended in 1996. And there was like pretty serious ethnic cleansing. There was, I mean, it's things that we don't think happen within less than 1,000 miles from the United States, right? Like, that happens over in Africa and we hear about it over there, but we don't like to think that it's closer.
Yeah, we were reading stories of just entire villages that had been wiped out, the people just slaughtered and burned, men, women, and children. And just because you're on the wrong side and you don't even be involved in politics, it's just part of one of those things. Genocide just happens.
Right. Particularly against indigenous people, you know, tribes and stuff. They periodically in Mexico and whatnot, there was an uprising in Mexico, didn't get much coverage. It's sort of been simmering in the southern part of Mexico, kind of near the Guatemalan border and all that, where indigenous people rose up, as they have several times, and said, enough, we're not getting treated right. And we're going to take control and we're going to break away. And the government said, not on our watch, and people were killed. That's the amazing thing. I mean, this isn't just the Disneyland version of the world. You know, we in California are going to see the fake Eiffel Tower. We're going to see the fake version, the sanitized version of the world. It's a small world after all. But there's an ice cream cone and there's a toilet right next door here and there's a policeman there to keep order. And Mickey Mouse is nearby to make everybody smile. This isn't that sanitized. This is the real world. And I don't think most Americans are ready for the real world. We're so naive about the real world.
Absolutely.
All right, so today is really not so much about that reality, but we're going to take a little bit of a road trip with you today here, what we've avoided in the first few episodes here. Take us through the journey through the Mayan
world. So we here in Guatemala, we stayed for about 4 or 5 days in Flores, Guatemala, which is just an incredibly beautiful, it's a little island on a huge lake in the northern part. And that's where we were going to visit Tikal from, which is actually has the tallest pyramids in the Americas.
Right.
And it's also where Star Wars was filmed, as we mentioned the last one of the famous shots from Star Wars is looking out over the jungle in Tikal and that kind of thing. But so we started off in Flores and we looked up a shuttle to get from Flores to Tikal and then Samuk-Champey, which was our next stop. And it was like $900 US for a shuttle or something like just ridiculous expensive from what we thought. And so we were like, well, we'll just rent a car. Like, why not? You know, how hard can it be to drive?
How hard can it be?
So my real idea is down here. And I think the fact that with a shuttle, you have like the shuttle driver and the owner of the shuttle driver service, like they're all part of your community when once you've paid them to help you with this transit. And so if you get a flat tire, for example, like we did, you have their network to help support you in getting to where you're trying to go. But instead, we decided to do the American thing and strike out on our own.
And particularly the Western California thing, the individual American thing. I can handle this. It's no big deal. And how scary can it be?
Yeah. Right. Thankfully, we did opt in for the 4x4 because it came in very handy. So we have our four-wheel drive little Isuzu crossover SUV. And we took it up to Tikal, which that one was pretty easy. That was only 2.5 hours. But from Tikal to Samuk Champeh, that's where we had to.
They said it could be anywhere between 6 and 10 hours, depending
on how. 16 days. Let me stop you for 1 second, because again, you're at the edge of my outer experience here. Belize was as far out as I ever went. And I originally went off to the islands and the Blue Hole and everything you've talked about. I saw all that stuff in the kind of touristy fashion. And then only on an wild impulse did my buddy and I say, let's get a Jeep and let's drive up into the jungle and see Tikal and those places. And you say Tikal's not that hard. Well, the year I was there, we were on our way and they stopped us at the border and said, no, senor, I wouldn't go any further. Why? Because there's bandits everywhere. Oh, I guess we're not going to Tikal. We drove all the way up here for nothing. So we saw some smaller Mayan ruin right on the edge and never made it to Tikal because the road wasn't open. That could have been the rainy season. It could have been the bandit season. It could have been a revolution. It's not always as easy as we think it's going to be. So continue the story. You got 6 to 12 hour maybe drive to this next place here.
So we decided, we'll do the American thing and look it up on Google Maps and get directions, right? Right. No big deal. Like that's what I do every day in America when we're there. And so it shows us two possible routes. One is like, very long kind of circuitous route, maybe 500 kilometers. We're like, okay, well,
And the other route.
And then there was a shorter route that more direct, straight across.
Yeah.
And it was, of course, the straight line is going to be better. It cut off like, probably 20% of the distance. And it said it was about 45 minutes shorter. And I was like, oh, well, let's do the shorter and faster route, right? No problem. It sounds great. So the one thing that Google Maps doesn't do down here is they don't have very many street view, and they also don't have altitude. So we learned the hard way that when sometimes the more direct route is not the better and faster way, unlike in America.
And we had to cross a river, and so we got in line to get on the ferry. There's like 5 cars that are allowed on this little wooden ferry that crosses the main river. And as we're going, somebody leans out of their car and is like, oh, and is like pointing down at our tire. He didn't sound like a monkey.
That's our American version of everybody outside of America. Ooh.
Now he's like pointing at our tire. And we're like, that's interesting. So Michael parks and looks out, and sure enough, we've got a flat tire. So we kind of hobble our way over to a
little shaded area
where all the chicken buses were parked. And we get out, and there's this guy just comes out of nowhere, asks us if we want help in Spanish. Enough Spanish. I know ayuda. That's an important one if you're in Spanish. Ayuda and help. And so he offered to help, and he helped Michael find all the tools, and they let down the spare tire, and he put it on, and we offered him money. We offered him cerveza. Like, do you want to have beer? And he's like, no. And he waved us off and just disappeared. And we're like, well, thank you, God, for sending an angel at the exact moment that we needed one.
Right.
to change our tire before we got on this treacherous road. And it was, I think it's a highlight because, yes, there were the tollmen that kind of
the bandito,
on the road who wanted money from us. But there was also this angel who came out of nowhere and helped us change a tire.
We would have happily paid 200 or 300 quetzals to help us.
Right. But he's part of that community. He's part of the network. And he just opened his arm, pulled us into his network.
And he's used to contributing. He's used to it's like a giant pool of goodwill. Right. I'm going to do this because I know at some point I'm going to have to pull out of that pool. So I'm going to need help. So I'm always giving and taking. I'm always contributing because I know eventually I'm going to have to rely on others to help me too.
Right. Yeah. So we prayed some blessings over him and got on the ferry right next to a whole bunch of cows and that were in, they have the open air like pickup trucks and they just load the cows in. We found out later this is actually a transportation device for humans too, because when we got on the back of the pickup truck, we had to hold onto the bars and we were grateful that we had, you know, thumbs that we could hold on to. I was like, hey, Cora, imagine if we were had hooves and we were in the back of this pickup truck. But yeah, it was just, so we crossed the ferry and then headed up into the mountains and we talked about the cable on the roads. But as we were going through these windy roads, it felt, we rolled down our windows because our windows are all tinted black. You can't see anything into our car if you're on the outside when our windows are up. I'm guessing it's a safety measure. Here,
yeah, it was actually later on that I asked somebody about that and they were like, yeah, if you, they tint all their windows very dark because otherwise if when you're driving through a city, if somebody sees that you're alone in a car, like they'll follow you and rob you when you get where you're going if they know that you're alone. So they tint all the windows and even the windshield like super dark, which drives me crazy when I'm trying to drive at night. But it, yeah, it's so that they don't know that one, if there's only one person in the car, and two, that it's a bunch of crazy American tourists so that, that are open to being robbed.
Yeah. So we didn't know this and we rolled down our tinted windows and we're like waving at the Mayan people.
And they're all looking at us like, what are these crazy Americans
they're
doing?
They're waving like, a red flag. Hey, come over here, crazy Americans. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right? And like they would just stare at us blankly and then we'd smile and wave and then they'd smile and wave back. But they were waiting to kind of see how we handled the situation. But I kind of got the feeling we might have been the only gringos. I was like, gringos perditos.
That have ever been down that road.
Yeah. Lost in the Mayan jungles. But it was amazing to watch how the communities thrive out there because they are growing corn, maize on these steep hillsides. Like I can't even tell you how steep, but I would not walk down to collect the corn. Yeah, that's how steep it was. Wow. And they live primarily on corn like they did 2000 years ago. Like in these villages, you get the sense that not much has changed.
They're wearing traditional clothing. They don't have any vehicles.
Yep. So they walk everywhere on leather sandals. They have woven clothes.
Living on corn.
Yeah. They make their houses out of mud bricks and
there's chickens flying everywhere.
And this is what struck me is when I went to Belize, and this is that general area that you're in. You're in Guatemala now, across the border, is how close this was to the United States. I somehow thought you had to travel by camel for 12 days to get out and see this kind of remote world, this kind of simplistic, you know, way it's always been. It's once you leave the border, it's all around you pretty quickly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, here's the other thing that struck me. I'm sorry. I just make one other point here. And that is the sense of history that you're talking about. That you're in a very historical perspective. You're aware of the history of the Mayans. You're intrigued by this mysterious group of people that in one way were so advanced, much more advanced than the people in Europe at that time. Astrologically, they're charting the stars. They're charting the universe, they're doing all sorts of advanced calculations, and yet they didn't have, as you said, a wheel or something.
They didn't have wheels, or metal. They didn't have any metal down here.
So
when the Spaniards came, it was sort of metal and gunpowder against the Stone Age. Like you realize the Mayans really never had a chance when you had, and they didn't have horses. The Spaniards brought the horses. So that's what they explained. Like they knew about the wheel. It just didn't make sense to have a wheel because you didn't have any beasts of burden. There were no horses or cattle or anything that could pull anything on a wheel. So
it's rough terrain. It's jungles. It's mountains. Yeah. It's everything else here. Why do we need this? And where do we want to go?
Although they created like 60 kilometer highways that are perfectly straight, combining Chichen Itza,
connecting Coba and Chichen Itza is like a 60 kilometers between them. And it was just a perfectly straight, raised like 2 meters off the ground of the jungle.
And plastered white.
Yeah, it's crazy the things that they accomplished with their technology.
So much better roads than the Romans did at the same period of time.
Exactly.
That's what the Romans were known for.
So there's a sense of history that permeates the neighborhood. I saw this when I went to Ireland, my only other one exotic trip we'll talk about if you ever get that far. And I, what struck me is we in California particularly have very little sense of history. 50 years ago was forever. 100 years ago is unimaginable.
Right.
And yet they, this is the way things have been for centuries, if not a thousand years. And they
millennia,
have that,
probably.
They have that sense of continuity. This is the way it's always been done here. Very little has changed over a long period of time. And they can recite history. These ruins go back. When were the Mayans? I don't even know. When were the, at the time of the Romans? Is this 2,000 years ago?
So, yeah. So there were Olmecs, which were kind of 2,000 to 1,500 BC. And then the Mayans are 1,500 BC to 1,500 AD. They're one of the longest spanning civilizations, aside from their weird disappearance gap in the middle there.
Right.
But yeah, it's a very long stretch that they have lived here in the kind of Central
Americas.
American.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So you've got this sense of history. You're the foreigner in a strange land. You're waving the crazy Americans. Why is it that we all accept the notion of crazy Americans? I never hear people come to this country and say, oh, there they are, crazy Guatemalans driving around. Don't they know better? But Americans, immediately you say crazy Americans outside of the border and everybody nods. Yeah, crazy Americans. They think they know everything. They think they can do everything. They don't understand anything. And so there you are, crazy Americans in the middle of nowhere. So you got up there. There's a couple of places. We're running out of time here. Take us through a couple of the places, because you talked this journey from there, way off the beaten path, Mayan ruins, and you get you all the way down to where you're at today. There's a couple of other stops.
Yeah, so the first stop there after all that crazy toll road and all that stuff was Samuk Champe, which is just an incredible little valley where the river, so there's a big river coming down from the north. It has cut down underneath the limestone. So it basically made a giant cave for about a mile and a half under the ground. And over that, the springs from the mountains have come down and made this limestone kind of tiered cascade that's just amazing. I mean, it's just beautiful.
Google image Samuk Champe. It's incredible. These like turquoise pools in the middle of the jungle.
We'll have to put this in the show notes when this gets posted, because I have no idea how to spell Samuk Champe, much less Google it. I never heard of it. Yeah.
But yeah, this is where Guatemalans want to go. This is on Guatemalan people's bucket list.
Yeah, this is where they go to vacation, Samuk Champe. So we got to stay at a wonderful, it's called Utopia Eco Hotel there. And it's actually-
That says it all, Utopia. Yeah, right.
Right? Yeah. And it's actually a cacao farm. So they have like 2,500 cacao trees. We got to pick cacao right off the tree and taste it raw.
This
and
then is we what? This chocolate. Is chocolate? Cacao is like chocolate?
Yeah, we made our own chocolate while we were there, which was just an amazing experience. It's so easy. You've got to Google how to, in fact, I think we're going to make a video how to make chocolate. And it's just basically just these, the chocolate beans and sugar, and you just blend it for 30 minutes.
Well, you dry the bean and then you roast the bean and then you shell the bean and then you get to food process it.
All Americans know is it comes wrapped in a piece of paper and foil and you unwrap it and it's a present from God here. Yeah, exactly. All right. So
actually the Mayans did believe it was a gift from God, that it was their sacred fruit. And it's because this fruit grows on the tree straight out of the trunk. It doesn't like grow off a branch like an apple, just straight out of the trunk. And
12 months a year. So it's literally all year long. There's no harvesting time for cacao. It's just all year long, partly because we're close to the equator. So it doesn't change much. But yeah, it was just a gift from the gods. So we were there for about 4 days. And then from there, we decided to drive down from Samuk Champe, which is kind of central Guatemala, to Antigua, which is southern Guatemala, the other side of Guatemala City. And it was another one. They were like, well, it's between 6 and 10 hours, another long trip. And this time I was smart enough to ask a local, like, what roads should we take instead of relying on Google Maps that we learned aren't necessarily the best way down here. And so we left Samuk Champe, started the drive down.
And then there was a road where they were doing construction. And you know how they say, like the guy with the stop sign says, just stop for a second. And then they wave one lane through and then you wave the other lane through. We were sitting there for like 10 or 15 minutes and didn't see any cars coming through.
Because that's the way it should work for Americans. Right? That's the way it should work
as Americans. Yeah.
And so Michael got out and asked him, and he basically explained to Michael that cars only come through once an hour on the hour. And so we had to sit there in the hot sun for 50 minutes and wait for our turn to get to go past all the bulldozers and get to the other side. And it was just, it was crazy. So we did that, and then we had timed it wrong. So we ended up in Guatemala City during rush hour traffic.
Right at rush hour as the sun was going down.
So now we're trying to navigate Guatemala City in creeping traffic with roads that don't have lights or signals or signs.
Or if they do, they don't follow them. They just ignore them and go keep going. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And like the beggars are walking faster than we are through Guatemala City at this point. So we finally get to Antigua, and then we couldn't find the house because the numbers, it was craziness. But we finally got into Antigua, and Antigua is sort of an oasis within Guatemala. Like, most of the people here seem to be college educated. They wear professional clothes, like high heels and slacks, and is normal attire here in Antigua.
It looks and feels like America again.
There's a feeling. And the thing I love about Antigua, it's actually become second place on our where could we stay forever home. So number one is still Asheville, North Carolina, but Antigua is now at number two. And the reason is, when you come into Antigua, everything is walls. Like, there's the street, there's a maybe a tiny little sidewalk, and then these 20-foot plastered walls around the entire block. So it feels like mini fortresses wherever you go. And it feels very intimidating. But when you walk through one of the big wooden doors that enter into these walls, every time we walk through a door in Antigua, it feels like we've stepped into a magical world. Yeah. Like, they take such pride on these courtyards and restaurants, and there's plants and there's lights gardens. Yeah. And even the McDonald's. It was this beautiful wooden stone with ivy crawling over it in McDonald's, right? And so it's just, it's like being in a whole city of secret gardens, and you just get to explore and discover.
The thing that I love about Antigua is the history. So I'll say that most of the places we go, just because I'm a history nut. But so Antigua was actually the capital of the Spanish Central Americas for about 200 years, from like from 1550 till 1775.
Didn't know
and
that.
In 1775, they had a humongous earthquake, and Antigua was very close to the epicenter. And so they had built monasteries and cathedrals, and just it was a huge Spanish bastion here in Central America. But the earthquake, they obviously didn't make them earthquake safe. No. And so it destroyed like 80% of the city.
Wow.
Basically, they looked at this rubble and these huge amount of ruins, and they said, well, we don't want to clean this up. So they just moved the capital about 30 miles away to where Guatemala City is today, and left Antigua literally in ruins. So for 1775 on, for, you know, a couple hundred years, as you walk down the street today, there's still on every single block, there's an old church or an old monastery that are old Spanish ruins. And half of them are like, the roof is still on the ground, and you could just walk through and explore these ruins. And it's just amazing. To me, it's incredible to be able to still walk where these buildings are in various states of repair.
We use the tidewater analogy before, where the mangrove, the fresh water meets the salt water. Maybe this is kind of like a little tide pool, little thing off to the side, outside of the main current, where things are very still and don't change much. And
I feel like this is where the old meets the new. A lot of the folks, like Caitlin said, are dressed in skirts and slacks and very, very nice, you know, very nicely dressed, professional. But then they're walking past ruins that have been laying there in that field for 250 years now. It's incredible.
And the indigenous people come to the market to sell their wares and bring it. So it is. It's definitely a
mixing.
I was going to say East meets West, but in this case, East is Spain and West is the Mayans.
Yeah, right. And I think you're going to see more of that, because, again, I haven't been beyond where you've been, out into the rest of the world. But people say, like, they go to the Middle East, and where you've got cultures stacked on top of each other. You've got the ancient Hebrew tribes, Israelite tribes, on top of Roman ruins, on top of Muslim conquests and temples and domes and stuff. You've got all of this stuff literally stacked on top of each other. And here you've got this kind of old, the Mayan culture on with a Spanish overlay, the conquistadors who came and tried to make it their own and bring some Western European flavor to it, which was all ruined and just left behind casually. And now it's populated with hipsters and modern looking Western style educated people here. It's a very, mm-hmm. it sounds like a very strange
hybrid.
Hybrid. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. you guys are a strange hybrid. You have taken your family out into the world. Last question. How did the kids react to all of this? Delays. We're not there yet. We're not sure how long this is going to take. Oh, sorry, we got to go a different route. That sounds like kid meltdown to me. Most American kids would not put up with what? You mean we can't stop? We got to go. We can't. I'm hungry. I'm thirsty. I'm tired. I don't want to keep going. What do you mean? I don't know when we're going to get there. How do they react?
It's funny. The boys have definitely learned about what they call the Mayan toilet. It was one of our guys was like, "Oh, just use the Mayan toilet." And it's, you know, when you're driving down the road, the kids have to go pee. There's nothing close by, so they just go a couple feet into the jungle.
That's the Mayan toilet. To the
it was really funny. Yeah, but I feel like that. Getting the kids to have this sense of, one, they can solve any problem, right? Like, as a family, we always approach problems as, what can we do to solve this? How can we finding a solution? But then also trying to get them to have more patience, have the same sense of getting rid of the should that we talked about last time a little bit. Right. And, you know, they have an idea that there should be video games, there should be Wi-Fi, there should be internet everywhere that we go.
There should be McDonald's every stop of those few feet.
McDonald's, yeah. Right. Every 30 minutes, we should, or less, we should see a McDonald's on the side of the road. Right?
Here in Antigua, we did go to McDonald's and it felt like we were walking into the American embassy. Like,
yeah. I will tell you the one time again, I went to Ireland and we were so tired of eating. The food is terrible in Ireland. I know why there are no great Irish restaurants in America, because the food is terrible everywhere we went. And I know why they drink so much, because that's to get rid of the bad taste of the bad food. So one time we went and stopped with my parents and we found a McDonald's. This is back in the 80s. This is one of the early ones for them. And we felt like, oh my God, you know, we're home, a McDonald's, you know. I was so grateful for McDonald's, a Big Mac in the middle of nowhere. I can imagine the same feeling in the middle of Antigua, a McDonald's.
Yeah. I think it has been with the kids, really just getting them to be more flexible and rolling with the punches, right. Really seeing things, seeing everything around them as an opportunity. We always, this may be mean, but we always tell them only bored people get bored, right? Or boring people get bored. So the kids all the time say, "I'm bored. What are we gonna do?" And so so our retort is always that
only boring
people get bored. Because
wow, putting a little expectation on them here. Okay, then you don't want to be a boring person, do you? No, not me.
And if that doesn't work, then we threaten them with chores, and inevitably they will find something.
Yes, right.
No, well, on road trips, they've gotten pretty used to road trips. They have apps that they can play without Wi-Fi. They download books, and we listen to audiobooks. So I feel like kids in the car, our kids have just gotten used to, yeah, we're in the car from sunrise to sunset and deal with it. Cora has learned to just not drink any water on road trips because she doesn't want to use the Mayan toilet.
No, exactly.
Better to arrive dehydrated than have to stop to pee. So they've gotten pretty good at road trips over the course of the adventure. But yeah, the lack of Wi-Fi, they assume that if they have a computer, it should be connected to the internet. And so figuring out that it doesn't always work that way has been rough.
So do they accept the unexpected more than us that have an expectation?
I think so, definitely. They, I don't think they're as entrenched in that the Western mindset, right. Even as Caitlin and I are as adults, like that this is how things should be, and that there's a that there's a set way. I've been kind of asking them as we go, what's different about this place than either the last place that we were or our home in California? What do you notice is the differences? And in some of them, like with our friends that we were just stayed with for a couple of days in Chichicastenango, they live in a small, there's five of them. It's the husband and wife and three kids.
And a nephew.
And they live in kind of this small mud brick hut on the side of a mountain. The track to get down to it is a little mud track. I mean, they're probably fairly well off by Guatemalan standards, but
they were excited because they had a roof over their kitchen now, which was fairly new, but it wasn't enclosed. So pigeons would roost in their rafters on the PVC pipe that collected the rainwater from the tin roof, because that's what they use to wash their dishes at the sink outside.
And, you know, that applies to everybody. Even I know Americans, when we went through Belize, again, my other, I got to say this, we went up into the jungle and we stayed at what was considered an eco-tourist lodge, an early one in the 80s. And it was run by some rather wealthy Brits. He was the heir to some lord or somebody. But he had given all that up and moved out to the jungle and built this thing himself, he and his wife and his couple of kids. And they had lived out there since they built it, with no running water and with no hot water. And this is a guy who grew up in kind of felt like castles and stuff in England. So this doesn't just apply to the poor. This applies to when you put yourself out in those environments, you do without certain things like running water and hot water and roof. Oh, we got a roof. Wow.
Right.
Yeah. And so we're hoping that it teaches our kids to appreciate things like roofs that are sealed and windows that keep the bugs out and heating and air conditioning and hot water. Yeah, we still sometimes don't have that, but
it really is interesting. Like where I was going with that is I asked the kids, what's different about this from our house in California? And for the most part, I mean, like you would look at that, like obviously, right? Like, oh, they don't have a roof. They don't have this. Caitlin and I would look at that or most adults would look at that and be able to point out the pretty glaring differences. But the kids are like, so they have to walk out to the outhouse to go potty. No big deal. I mean, they just because they're not so entrenched in what they expect, they don't even see the differences really.
And I think that's the beauty maybe of children is that for a child, everything is new, whether it's new suburbia America or new backwoods Guatemala. When everything is new, you just have to sort of take everything in stride because there isn't a benchmark of shoulds that you're falling back on. Exactly. And so, like we said, the kids, people keep telling them how lucky they are. And they're like, yeah, whatever. Right.
this is just life. We're not lucky.
This is just their new normal. And they don't see it as being particularly different, maybe less convenient. They miss their friends, but for them, and I don't know if it's because we are sort of that bubble, protecting them from, they don't have to change the flat tire, right? They don't have to pay the toll booth, right? So there's a certain level of insulation that they're getting as we take them into these different places. But I think it's just maybe the blessing or the curse of being a child. When everything is new, then everything is normal.
Well, let's leave it there. When everything is new, everything is normal. That's going to be your mantra as you travel the world in search of your forever home. Where are you headed next, and what are we going to hear in the next episode? When we pick up with you next week, where will you be? Still in Guatemala or have moved on to somewhere
else? We'll still be in Guatemala. We'll have gone to a little town called Chichicastenango, and then we're going to Lake Atitlan. And then from there...
We're flying to Ecuador. I think next, about 8 days from now, we'll be flying to Ecuador. So the next one will be the rest of Guatemala, and then after that, we'll be... actually in the real South America as opposed to Central. So yeah, that'll be fun.
Okay. Well, we're going to ride along with you as you take us along with your family and the whole rest of the world following you here on this journey around the world in search of your forever home. Right here in Orange County's only community radio station, we're going to ride along. We hope you will too, as we follow the all over the map family.